It's the California Wine Country Podcast with Steve Jackson and Dan Berger. We taste, we laugh, we learn.
California Wine Country brought to you, of course, by Bottle Barn. Dan Berger, introduce our guests.
Sobraggio Vineyards. How long have you guys been in business?
I was at the winemaker at Behringer, or winemaster at Behringer.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And they were very gracious to me to allow me to start it while I still had a day job, which made the bank happy. That's so nice. I started in 2001. Adam came with me in 2003 and started making wines, and he's done it ever since. I take all the credit. He does all the work.
Adam, was this a family project?
That's like me and Mike DeWall.
You end up having to go to school, too.
I basically went to the school of Ed Sparagia. So
there you go. I figured that one out.
It definitely is a family project. So it's been a lot of fun being able to work with my dad and my brother and sister and my nephew and everyone there at the winery working together and trying to make the best wine possible.
That's a beautiful location you've got there. It's not only is it a beautiful location, but you've got some neighbors that are stellar people and making really fabulous wines right in your district. You want to talk a little bit about that end of the Dry Creek Valley?
Well, we're at the last winery on Dry Creek Road, so we're on the most northern side, the hotter side. That's where we've had the winery since 2006. So we bought that facility in 2006. It was the old Lake Sonoma Winery owned by Gary Heck. So we've really been lucky enough to have a big event facility and been able to take the winery and the production side and make it our own. So we've got a lot of great neighbors down there. Bella, Raffinelli, Papa Pietro Perry, Fry Corona, which has just been in the news lately, just getting sold to Foley. And a lot of great neighbors, obviously a lot of great Zinfandels out that way, but a lot of other great varietals out there, Carignan, Petit Syrah, and obviously a little bit of Sauv Blanc and Chardonnay.
A classic historic region in a lot of ways, because this the entire county started pretty much in the general vicinity where you are, because you had a little bit of Russian River, which nobody even called that in those days, back in the ASTI days in 1881 and so forth. But you guys, now you started pretty much with red wine, did you, Ed?
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, working at Behringer with Myron, he taught me how to make white wines. He'd been in business for 32 years when I went to work for him. And
wow.
So he taught me how to make really nice white wine, and then I kind of looked at the way my father had been making, more in the Italian, you know, not a lot of racking and fining, just making a clean wine and keeping the barrels full and keeping the winery clean, which we've done. I kind of brought that, and I made wine that way for the last 50 years now.
You know, we've talked on this show a lot about Andrei Chelyachev, but people don't remember how important a figure Myron Nightingale was. Do you want to talk a little bit about Myron's history with the industry?
Myron went to school in the class of 1941 at the University Viticultural Program and Enology Program, and was at Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
And he graduated with Louis Martini in 1941. And Charlie Crawford, who was the head of Gallo.
And in those days, Myron Nightingale's name was right up there with Andre's name.
Yeah, and he and his wife Alice made the first botrytized wine that got any credit in the United States. He got it was called Primer Sauvignon when he was back at Cresta Blanca. And then he eventually came to work for us in 1973, and then he hired me in 76, my good fortune. And
wow.
We talked him into doing it again. We called it Nightingale in 1980, and I think they're still making it.
You look like you're 40. How could you be doing this for so long when you
red
look
wine
like
and garlic?
Thank you. Ed, talk more about Andre, and as Dan pointed out, his name comes up all the time.
Yeah, well, I mean, Myron and Andre. Myron, yeah. Andre started what at BV? What in the 30s?
37 or 36, I guess. Yeah.
And when I got in the business, I was working at Fopiano in the 70s, 74, 75.
Wow.
Andre was a consultant with Marianne Graff up at CME.
Right.
And I remember a couple times I had a little problem and had this white powder at the bottom of a perfectly filtered Chardonnay, or Chablis, I guess what we called it back then,
right.
Tank.
Yeah.
And I go on, I filtered this. This is clean. I went up to him, and he looked at me, and he said, pink yeast. And it was basically yeast that eat each other, and it fell to the bottom of the tank. And He said, don't worry about it. You're filtering it, so it's going to be fine.
Wow.
Myron was really an interesting character. He had as tough a personality as just about anybody, and he and Andre got along pretty well. I mean, there was a little tension there, but it wasn't...
No, he was a short guy, too.
Yeah.
And he had that little Napoleon complex. At the same time, he was the sweetest man.
Yeah.
He'd come out... Somehow he'd go to, we had it, in those days there were no computers, we had a Cardex, and he'd see what we had analyzed. And he'd walk in the night before and see which one we'd missed. And he'd walk in the next day, open it up, and start screaming. And everybody else would run, and I'd stand there like a dumb idiot. And he'd wink at me, and then he'd keep on yelling. But everybody who came in the lab, he took them out to lunch. He took them under his wing. He was a great teacher and a great, great winemaker.
Ed and Adam Sbraja from Sbraja Winery here. Adam, talk about your career and how you, besides the fact that you're his son, got into all this.
I think, growing up in Hillsburg in the middle of wine country and having a family that was in the wine business before we owned a winery and before my dad was a winemaker. My grandfather was a grower. He came over from Italy in the 20s and
cool.
Tried to start a winery, but Prohibition and Depression killed that dream for him and a lot of people. But after a lot of work and a little luck, he was able to buy some land in the Dry Creek Valley. So I grew up on that land. I grew up in the vineyards. The house that I live on now was the house that my dad grew up in and was raised in, that I was raised in, and now I'm raising my two daughters in. So very lucky to be involved from the ground up. I was growing up either at the winery with my dad or on the tractor with my grandfather. So I was immersed in it, as many people in Hillsburg are. You know, growing up, most people's family or mother or dad or grandfather are involved in the wine industry some way, whether it's grower or vintner or working cellar or sales agent or something like that. So my best friend's dad owned McDonald's in Hillsburg, so he could get free McDonald's. So that's all we cared about as kids, you know.
Amen to that, bro.
No one cared that we had cellars worth thousands of dollars of Bordeaux and Napa Cab. I was never forced to do anything in it. I worked a little bit at the end of high school as a sugar sampler, going out into the fields and testing berries to see how close they are to being ready to pick. But did acting in high school, did drama, so got into UC Davis, but at the very end got into UCLA. So the balancing act quickly got outweighed by LA and the acting and the glamour.
You went to the big town.
Yes. So went down to UCLA, got my major in sociology and my minor in acting. So didn't really learn how to do anything. So I went on to knew the winery was a possibility and knew I had to get to work if I was going to learn anything and be able to be helpful in the business. So went home and went to work as an intern for Crush at St. Clement, working for Aaron Pott, and then moved over to Souverain while Behringer still, when they still had the Chateau, mm-hmm. and worked for Ed Killian there. And then when they sold the Chateau to Coppola, went to Behringer and worked on the private reserves. And also, we were just starting Sbraja, so there wasn't a lot of, we weren't making a lot of cases then. So worked on, ran Sbraja when we custom crushed at Behringer, and also worked on the private reserves. And then in 2006, we bought the winery at the end of Dry Creek, and it's been a whirlwind ever since.
I mean, one of it is that my dad and my uncle started a little winery right after Prohibition in the 30s and went belly up during Depression. So it was
really?
A dream going way back.
Wow.
And when my father got too old, I mean, he ran the ranches until he was 75. And then he did 5 acres until he was 80. But he always wanted me to be a partner with him. And I, like Adam, ran away, became a chemist, and got dragged back in. Because I wanted to make wine with my dad. And so therefore it kind of worked out as fulfilling a promise. In fact, our winery at the vineyard at the around the winery is called La Promesa, the promise. So it's fulfillment of a dream and a promise I made my dad.
That's very cool.
And I wanted to work with this guy, my son, Adam.
What's the varietal mix at Sbraja these days?
We're 100% Zinfandel in terms of what we grow on the vineyard, but about 30% Chardonnay, 30% Cab, 20% Zin, And then we have a sprinkling of some of our wine club wines, Carignan, Petit Sirah, Merlot. We make a little Sauvignon Blanc, a little Rosé.
Make a port.
A little port.
I make that.
That's my dad's project, so he gets to make
it. I actually get up at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, that's not fun, but it sounds like a fun project other than the 3 o'clock in the morning.
We didn't bring that. That's kind of like nail in the coffin.
So we have a couple wines that we distribute, and then we have a lot of our little diamonds that we have at the winery.
It is California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn. Joining us, the wine buyer from Bottle Barn, Barry Herbst. Bear, what's up, buddy?
Doing great. Thanks, Steve.
Talk about Sobragia.
It's the kind of wine I like to sell. It sells itself. People know the name from way back. We've got Cabernet, Zin, Chardonnay, pretty much everything they'll sell us out there.
Explain to everyone what Bottle Barn is doing during this latest shutdown.
We're 7 days a week. The store is open 10 to 6. Everybody has to wear a mask. We've got sanitizers all over the place, plexiglass at the registers. And then also people can order online for curbside pickup, and they just come to the back door and give us their name, and we've got the order ready to go. The checkout time, you just have to choose curbside pickup instead of shipping.
All right, bottlebarn.com.
The website now has a couple of specials from Spain, really interesting wines.
Yeah, we did a feature on Spain this week, and I think there's going to be something on South Africa next week, and then there's flash sales. We usually have one or two a week, you know, just as we find them, so... A lot of good stuff coming through the website right now.
Barry, stay well. We'll talk next week, buddy. Our guest today on California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn, Ed and Adam Sobragia from Sobragia Winery. Ed, where in Italy is your family from? I ask in particular because I'm actually Italian. My real name is Vicario. But what part of Italy is your family?
We're in the town of Lucca. North of Florence.
Yeah.
About 13 miles from the ocean. Walled city, almost like bone. Beautiful, where Puccini came from. Long history. They used to fight with the Florentines, and that's why they had the walled cities.
My wife and I visited about 10 years ago, and unfortunately it was the day that they were doing Comic-Con in Lucca.
Comic-Con in Lucca?
Yes, sir.
I had no idea.
I couldn't find parking for an
Star
hour.
Star Wars guys
yeah,
there.
That's right. It was just silly. It couldn't do anything.
The first wine we had was our 2019 Redwood Ranch Sauvignon Blanc. That's Sauvignon Blanc has always been a part of our repertoire. We had our own Sauvignon Blanc vineyard for a long time until we switched to this one because we really like Russian River. It's stainless steel fermented, very cold. Takes about a month and a half for it to ferment out dry. Very tropical, easy drinking, nice acid. Would be great for a day like today out on the back porch. So,
oh, hell yeah.
It's a fun wine to make. Sauv Blanc's always fun because we're already drinking the 2019, and we'll be picking the 2020 probably in about 2 weeks from now. So,
wow.
Also, it's my wife's favorite wine, so we're stuck making it forever.
And well, good, because I love it, too, and I don't need to be sitting out at the pool in the summer to drink it. I'll have my AC cranked up tonight at home and drink it there and love it just as much.
When I first tasted it, my first thought was ceviche scallops.
Ooh.
She has good ceviche shrimp at home.
Sounds good to me. I'll take them both.
So now we're gonna talk a little bit about our Chardonnays. We have two Chardonnays. My father was well known for Chardonnay at Beringer. He's the only winemaker ever to win Best Wine in the World for a white wine.
Wow.
And that was his Sprague Limited release. We still make a Sprague Limited release at the winery. It's only winery only, so you'll have to come see us to get it. But the two Chardonnays we have here are two single vineyards. The first one I'm going to talk about, that's sort of my baby. It's our home ranch Chardonnay. It comes from Dry Creek. It is a little different than the Chardonnays you may have known from Sprague. We wanted to make a little bit more of a diversity between our two Chards, a little bit more of a canyon between them. So this Chardonnay is in barrels for about 8 months. It goes through partial malolactic. Malolactic fermentation is when you take that malic acid, sort of like when you bite into an apple, that sharp acidic acid, and change it to lactic acid. So milk, butter, creamy. That's where you get those butter and creamy Chardonnays. So this goes through half of that process. And so you get a little bit of that buttery base, but still we're trying to highlight a lot of those nice tropical notes.
Yeah, and it's still dry.
Yes.
It's not overly buttery.
No. Yeah, exactly. What we're trying to do is, for those people that like stainless steel Chardonnays, this will fall in your roundhouse, but it's not totally stainless steel. So I say it's more of my millennial Chardonnay.
Well, and Dan, tell me why I love this.
I think part of the reason is that there's some oak here, but you don't taste it. I mean, it's there, but it has a textural element more than it is a flavor.
Yeah.
And that's the most impressive thing, because it's such a tricky balance. In the winery, this wine hasn't developed anything, and the guy has to put the thing in the barrel, and he's going to try to make a blend with all these different pieces. And this wine is really very tricky to put together, because you want some, but you don't want too much.
Exactly. What we're trying to do is make a difference between the next wine we're going to drink, which is our Gamble Ranch Chardonnay, which is a vineyard that my dad has worked with for over 45 years. Here you go. We're going to pour it right now, so bear with us.
So the Dry Creek Chardonnay is only got about 10% new oak, and the balance gets the barrels from the Gamble Chardonnay, which is what we're tasting now. And it's so you get these one-year-old barrels that are beautiful.
That we put into the Home Ranch Chard. The Gamble Ranch gets 100% new French oak, and it goes for 18 months versus the 6 months of the Home Ranch.
So, I mean, I tasted a great French wine, Batard Montrachet, once, and at the time I was going there, the French would tell us where they wouldn't tell their neighbors. So it was actually a DRC, and the guy came to me and told me he built fermented for 18 months in barrels or the Romanes, and then, you know, they tell us stuff that, why not try? You know, it's not going to turn out like a Batard Montrachet or a great white Burgundy, but it's a technique that's been evolved over 900 years. So we tried it, and it made a wine like this. It made me happy, and if I can't be happy about the wines I make, I'm not going to make them. So I've been making this for 40 years.
Right on.
This is the style of wine that you would, if you bought it in France, it would cost you $400 a bottle. $300 at one of the cheaper ones.
Really?
this is really a style that you don't see very much in this country. It's very tricky to make because you run the risk of spoilage every time you make it. You're running the wine right up to its point where it's going to fall apart.
And it's surprising that you could age. I mean, my financial guys don't like it, leaving a white wine in barrels for a year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
It evolves, and in the process of stirring the lees, you're taking out the excess buttery popcorn character out of the malolactic. You're taking out the excess woody character and leaving behind the kind of like the creme brulee, the burnt sugars from the new barrels. So you end up with a nice balance of fruit and evolved characters from winemaker, I call it winemaker interference, versus that last wine, which is pure vineyard. This is more evolved Chardonnay.
I agree, and I don't know that much, but this is silkier and smoother than the first one.
Steve, just think of
the first one kind of just kicked my ass. I really like that.
But this is lovely. Think of this as red wine. This is red wine with no color.
Okay. Yeah, this is a red wine drinker's white wine. Or actually, after you've finished tasting all these big red wines, you come back and have this and be happy.
When you taste at Domaine de la Romanée Conti, they serve all the reds first.
Which is in Pengrove, right?
Yeah, right. They taste all the reds first, and then they serve you this kind of wine at the end.
Yeah, we did a Burgundy tasting.
Really?
And I was totally impressed because they did all the Pinots first, and then they served Chardonnay.
Wow.
This kind of Chardonnay.
That is amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of labor in this. We stir the lees weekly, so a lot of people say, oh, great, what does that mean? Well, basically, we have to pull the barrels down, open them up, use basically what looks like a golf putter, and get in there and stir those lees, all the yeast, all the everything that went into the
fermentation. I've been hoping for a hot golf putter for years. That's why I retired from playing golf. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
So basically, we're stirring the wine, getting everything reintroduced to the wine, and we do that weekly for almost 18 months.
Wow.
And you know, not that I've ever tried to make a French wine. I won't even try, you know, but using techniques that they use that worked for hundreds of years, it was a slam dunk. And It's basically just an angle iron on a rod that resuspends the yeast. And the French say that le vin mange le lit. The wine eats the lees, and it actually reduces that down. So it's re-evolving and dissolving in the wine, and I think that's where you get all that viscosity.
And that's why it's red in a certain way. It's texturally, in your mouth, it feels like a red wine.
I agree. But it's certainly white, and it's a Chardonnay.
This is my favorite wine as I approach my later years to drink on a regular basis.
Really? And again, what year is this?
This is actually a 2016.
16?
Yes, because we let them age so long that they come out almost a year after the home ranch.
Wow.
And they'll still age pretty well for 10 years.
It's beautiful stuff.
And very few Chardonnays will age this long.
Then again, old wines have certain characteristics that, like an old red wine, either you like that or you don't like it. I live in the world of young wines, so it takes me some adjusting to drink old wines.
Ed and Adam Spraja are here at Spraja Winery, SBRAGIA.com. California Wine Country, brought to you by Bottle Barn. Our guests are Ed and Adam Spraja. Spraja Winery, Spraja.com. From Thursday to Tuesday, from 10:30 in the morning until 5 p.m., you're serving wine and stuff.
Yeah, we're open for business.
Right
on. You know, we are doing everything we can to keep everyone safe and keep our employees safe and keep the cash registers at a slow roll, hopefully. We are open by appointment, as all the wineries can be. Everything's outside. We're very lucky that we have a huge building with a huge terrace, and about three-fourths of it's covered. So people are in the shade. They're comfortable.
And you're dog-friendly.
We're very dog-friendly.
Bring
your dog.
That.
Dogs and babies.
We have dog bowls everywhere with water and food. So yeah, we're doing the best that we can. You know, everyone wears a mask. You have to wear a mask until you get to your table, and then you can take it off and enjoy the servings.
But you must make a reservation.
You must make a reservation.
And you can bring your own food now.
Oh, really?
And we will have food service also.
Okay. SBRAGIA.com. Dry Creek Valley. You guys need to check this out. Dan, give me some more thoughts on Spraja.
Well, first of all, one thing that is important is that Ed's history goes way back with Behringer, and that gave him an opportunity to meet and get to know really well a lot of different growers. And so he knew all the secrets of the vineyards. So when he decided to start this property, he knew who to go to, who were the most reliable growers. There are some growers out there you don't want to talk to, and Ed knew some of them, decided to just talk to the ones he had long history with. So that's one of the reasons why all the grapes he's getting, whether he's growing them or purchasing them, are from people who understand his mentality and his strategies. And that's important, because these wines start in the vineyard. They don't start in the winery. They start long before the vintage.
No, we're just in the process right now where mostly Adam, but me a little bit, running around the vineyards trying to find out a ripe grape. And the key is optimum maturity, good quality, optimum maturity. And with that, it gives us the opportunity to make the wines we want to make.
I wish there would be more wineries that would spend a little bit of time on some of these esoteric varieties that really don't ever get focused. You know, there are a few people who are making Barbera, some people making Nebbiolo, but right now it's a little too soon for you guys. This is that's a little risky to mess around with.
Well, we're making Carignan and Petit Sirah.
Well, I love Carignan. I think it's a fabulous
great variety.
Workhorse grape.
Well, and it also goes into our Zins, because when my dad planted his vineyard in the 50s, I threw rocks and chased a dog, but I was supposed to be picking up roots. He planted Carignan and Petit Sirah, and which was the technique that most Italians did, because they were used to, especially the ones from Tuscany or Sangiovese or that area, were used to drinking Sangiovese. And if you think of dry Greek Zin with a little Carignan and Petit Sirah, It's pretty close to a good Sangiovese.
Yeah, that's a good point. And the other thing, too, is that the system does call for somebody with a long expertise enough to be able to call neighbors and say, this is what I'm doing, what are you guys doing, and just sort of share the wealth, so to speak. And Ed's long history, and not to mention your other activities, your involvement in so many other activities, which you haven't mentioned at all.
Oh, please mention.
Mike Martini and I, a bunch of guys, started, there was no music for one of our American Society of Enology and Viticulture in 1983. So we practiced when none of us even had equipment. We used to play, you know, row the boat ashore at Mike's house after drinking a couple of bottles of wine. And we started, bought electric guitars, and we played in a band together called Okey Bunghole and the Lactone.
Oh, you gotta love that.
And later on, Private Reserve, when we started getting gigs for 30 years. We just kind of disbanded lately because everybody's scattered.
Sure.
In our 70s.
I do remember that, yes. I remember. That's.
And we had a great time.
Yes, you did, and that's what it's all about. So again, Spaggia.com, and you need to check it out at SBRAGIA.com. They are open out there Thursday through Tuesday, 10:30 in the morning to 5 p.m. They're very dog friendly, but you need to make reservations. So go to the website.
That's a really pretty area of Dry Creek as well, by the way, if you haven't driven past. I mean, most people drive up about halfway up Dry Creek Valley and then they turn around. Keep going. It's fun.
The end of the valley, or actually it's where the river begins coming out of the dam. So it's the beginning of the valley.
We'll talk. And it's give our listeners more of a, you know, description of how
to
get
there. So we're right up against the Lake Sonoma Dam. So Lake Sonoma, you can see the dam right out, right off the winery. And the valley's about 1 mile wide right there. So it's pretty much the narrowest part of the valley, and it's beautiful. We have the winery is up on a hill, so it overlooks the whole valley. You can see all the way down the valley to the north, to the south, excuse me. And
you can see the fog coming up the Russian River.
Yeah.
So you can see that.
Gotta love that.
The southern side of the valley is the cooler side, where the Chardonnay and the Sauv Blanc comes from, versus the northern side, which is the hotter side. It can be anywhere from 5 to 10 degrees hotter on any given day, where we have our Zinfandel.
And we usually clear about 9 o'clock in the morning, so it's sunny on the deck. We have a beautiful deck.
Right.
Great place to sit. And
you must get a lot of fishermen there.
You know, I thought that would be the case, but when people come out of the lake, and I think they already had enough to drink, they go home.
About this, Dan, talk about this one.
Hey, this is called Home Field Red Blend, and it's a blend of Zinfandel, Cabernet, and some other stuff. It's fabulous wine. Drinks like...
I just got the one-minute sign from Mike, okay. So... Talk fast, Dan.
All right, 51% Zinfandel, 8% Carignan, 4% Petit Syrah, et cetera. 25% Cabernet. It's really wonderful wine. What's the retail on this?
This is one of our more affordable wines. This is one of our most distributed wines. This is $25 a bottle. This is a project I started at Spraja. Obviously, it's called Home Field because Dry Creek is my home field. It's the place I grew up. It's where most of my friends lived and they work. It's where I lived. It's really a tribute to the other families like ours that started out as growers and got lucky and were able to buy some land or already had land and build a winery. And really, it's a tribute to the blend is really something I've been wanting to do for a long time because my dad made so many blends at Behringer, and we always made single vineyards at Spraja that I sort of wanted to try my hand at a blend, and that's what
Well, it's
is.
Lovely. Spraja.com, Ed and Adam Spraja. Thank you guys for coming back in.
Thank you for having us.
We appreciate it.
Come see us.